Hello, friends, and thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. It's me, Duncan Trussell, reporting in to you from planet Earth, where we are all eternity trapped in ham, trying to understand exactly what we do as we wander around this bend in the space-time continuum caused by the giant ball that we're on pressing into the fabric of space and time. I'm getting this up on Thursday because of on Tuesday, in the midst of doing the intro, I got a call from my mom, who had just gotten back from the doctor because she had started feeling bad. She's, as some of you know, most of you probably know, she's had late stage breast cancer for the last 4 years, and it moved from her. It moved into her bones, and from her bones, it moved into her liver. That happened a few months ago, and that has progressed. And basically, the doctor told her that she's got to go wherever she's going to die because, you know, that her time is very, very short. Because once it spreads in your liver, at some point, your liver is going to hemorrhage, and that will cause you to go into a coma, is what he told her. So she was calling to tell me that, and then that news sort of made me press pause on recording the intro and start figuring out other stuff, which is that I've got to go up there and probably I'm going to be saying goodbye to her for the last time. I was talking to a friend of mine. A friend of mine called me up, and she was calling because right now she's an actor, and right now it's pilot season in Los Angeles. And so what pilot season is where all the actors try to get jobs on the network TV shows. And pilot season is just one of the most, I've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's just brutality for actors and for people who want to be on TV. It's just, it's this terrible, archaic series of brutal initiations, and it's really rough, and you've got to be, you're in traffic all the time, and it's just brutal. And she was calling to talk to me, and we talked a little bit, and then, you know, I told her I've got to go up to, my mom's dying, I gotta say goodbye to my mom. And her response was, oh, you know, how am I complaining about this when you've got to go say goodbye to your mom who's dying and just got one of your balls snipped off. And I've been finding a lot of this has been happening where there this hierarchy gets created, where people will complain about little things to me, and then the little things that they're complaining about, that immediately gets followed by, like, how could I even complain? You know, you only have one ball now. What am I complaining about? Some bad service that I got at a restaurant, or some little problem that happened with my car. But here's the thing. The big problems are less problematic than the little problems. That's the amazing paradox. The big problems give you something to fight. The little problems, the tiny little tragedies, they drive you insane. And this is articulated in a really beautiful way in this poem by Charles Bukowski.
It's not the large things that send a man to a madhouse. Death, he's ready for. Or murder, incest, robbery, fire, flood. No, it's a continuing series of small tragedies that send a man to the madhouse. Not the death of his love, but a shoelace that snaps with no time left. With each broken shoelace, out of 100 broken shoelaces, one man, one woman, one thing enters a madhouse. So be careful when you bend over.
So be careful when you bend over, pals. He's absolutely right. And I'm just going to get on with this podcast. I'm heading up to North Carolina soon. I've talked with my mom about this, and she wants to do a podcast, so I'm probably going to do a podcast with her if she's able to do that. We both appreciate the kind words that you've been sending our way, and we both want you to know that no matter what, we're fine, and we're going to be fine. So let's get on with this podcast. Got a great guest, Johnny Pemberton. I recorded this before all this happened with my mom. This was recorded last week. Like I said, this bit of phenomena sort of got in the way of releasing the podcast. But got a great podcast with my pal, Johnny Pemberton. Before that, let's do some business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Shore Design T-Shirts. Shore Design T-Shirts is one of the finest T-shirt companies on earth. You can go to shoredesignt-shirts.com and buy one of these soft, beautiful shirts. You put my name in, you get 10% off. You can also support this podcast by going to audible.com/family hour and signing up for a trial membership. Get an audiobook. Just do it, for God's sakes. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while and you haven't done it yet, why? Why would you stick thorns in my eyeballs? Why would you claw at my face with you? But why would you turn your back on? It's such a simple thing. Actually, I don't know if it's simple. I have an Audible membership, but I never signed up for a trial one. Maybe it's difficult. I don't know. But go do it. You get a free audiobook. You can cancel your membership. It's a simple thing. It'll take 4 minutes out of your life, and those sweeties at Audible send me $15. Another way that you could support this podcast is going through our Amazon portal located at duncantrussell.com. So the next time you're going to buy silk gloves or an embroidered parrot or a wristwatch or Vaseline, lubricants, butt plugs, they have everything there. Pentagram rugs, oatmeal bars. Go through our Amazon portal. It costs you nothing. They give us a percentage of that. Amazon.com has everything, and eventually Amazon will surround the entire planet and we'll all exist on a shelf at Amazon, and we'll all get shipped out to aliens. But before that happens, you can help support this podcast just by buying stuff for yourself. And thanks for all of you who've been donating to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast and buying our t-shirts. And thanks for all of you who have been participating on the forum and have been joining the Minecraft server. I just recorded a podcast, which is going to come out next week, with Pendleton Ward, the creator of Adventure Time. And he actually hangs out on our Minecraft server. And I've got to tell you guys, that blew my mind. So if you guys want to possibly brush shoulders with a genius who's created one of the most awesome cartoons on earth, go to duncantrussell.com and join the Minecraft server. Also, I'm going to be going on tour at the end of this month, 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th, I'm going to be in Athens, Georgia. I'm going to be in Richmond, Virginia. I'm going to be at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. So please, you guys, go get tickets to these events. New York we've already sold half the tickets, and it's almost a month away. So just don't, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm pestering you guys, but if you are thinking about coming to these shows, get the tickets now. Why not? They're all at my website at duncantrussell.com. I'd love to see you guys out there. It is my favorite thing on earth, in fact. And finally, thank you again for all the kind words, the well wishes, and the condolences that I've been getting from everyone. I truly appreciate it, and my mom truly appreciates it. And if you want to send my mom some sweet tweets, you can send them to Duncan's Mom, DUNCANSMOM108 at Twitter. That's a little account I set up for her, and she really loves it. She really loves hearing from you guys. So, all right, you guys are the greatest humans on earth. I'm happy that we all exist. Congratulations for taking a human incarnation. I'm not sure what you were in the past life, but this is a lucky incarnation. I'm glad we're all here together. Today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, he's been on the podcast a few times. He's a brilliant comedian, an amazing actor, one of my dear friends. Everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the sweetest man known to men, Johnny Pemberton.
Oh, 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 but the booty doo. Home, there's a bird next to you.
Home. Oblivion! Oblivion! No man! Nobody! change. It does not grow.
Flowers are in bloom for doom. Flowers are in bloom for doom. Black, 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 black. Flowers are in bloom for doom. Flowers are in bloom for doom. Temporary, momentary expressions of universal consciousness. Beware, beware, don't let them trick you.
Beware, they'll make you believe you're immortal. They'll make you wear formal wear to parties.
I don't want to wear formal wear to your stupid get-together. I don't
want to
wear formal wear to your stupid get-together. I don't want to wear, I want to wear, I don't want to wear, I want to wear, I don't want to wear, I want to wear, I want to wear, I want to wear sweatpants in the shower.
Oh, man, how about that, huh? How about that?
How about it?
How about all these
lick shots?
These, human beings, Johnny. What do you think about these sons of bitches?
I don't know. I think I'm one of them. I think we run the spectrum, don't we?
Yeah, it's a real mess.
From beautiful crimson orange to dark bloody brown.
From blue eyes to brown. That's what makes the world go round.
I have a little treat here.
What do you got?
I got some fresh pea pods.
God damn, boy. Johnny Pemberton, you guys.
I just picked these from the garden
today. This is
today.
Something that I don't think you, those of you who've listened to the podcast... And know Johnny and have listened to the other episodes. One thing that you don't realize about Johnny as you listen to him chew one of his wonderful pea pods is he is a child of the earth. You're a child of the earth. You're a tea god.
We all are, though.
See, that's what a child of the earth would say.
Okay.
That's exactly what earth children say as they chew upon their pea pods when someone points out that they're earth children.
Earth children. Well, I had a neighbor growing up on a house when I was like, you know, 10-year-old kid, and the lady next door was this really weird lady named Mrs. Gilchrist, and her whole front lawn was filled with wildflowers. And I was like, oh, she's like a hippie, right? My mom was like, no, she's an earth mother. She's older than hippies, because she was too old to be a hippie.
Yeah, your mom's earth mother. Smart.
Earth mother.
God, I'll take a million earth mothers over a hippie any day of the week.
Earth mama. She was like real, like kind of weird, and kind of like, hey, kind of, you know, distant.
Distant.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit spacey.
Well, you know, we're that's the problem is there's not enough Earth mothers. There's these. I don't know that, you know. I guess I smoked pot today when I shouldn't have in the morning.
Did you do it first thing?
Yeah,
in the shower.
I wanted to go right. Well, see, I've been reading. I just finished this crazy book by
PhD.
Philip K. Dick. Gave me the... Anytime I read a Philip K. Dick book, I've got a week of being fucked up from reading the book. And this one really got me.
That's such a good feeling, too, when you read something and it's like... It feels like it warps your perspective.
Yes.
I like that a lot. I haven't had that in a while. I feel like I'm really missing that in books.
Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, I guess... Sometimes it's like I have to find something a certain way, otherwise I don't... You know what I mean? You have to... Like, I can have someone recommend something to me, but when I find it... at the right time, then it's like it makes it all the difference as opposed to just reading it.
You read a lot.
I go back and forth. Sometimes I read a ton, sometimes I won't read anything but magazines.
When you read, how do you find the time to read?
I usually read in bed before bed, or I read in transit someplace. That's why I like to travel. If you're traveling, I feel like that's the only time I can really read.
Yeah.
Like I read Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried. Have you read that?
Nope.
It's fucking amazing. It's so well written. It's like, you know, it's about soldiers in Vietnam, but it's not just about that at all. He messes with like time convention and like all these things about what is truth when you're writing. Like it's so bizarre. But I read that cover to cover I bought it in the airport and read it the entire flight, and then I got home and I read it, finished it in like 2 hours at home. And I was like, I've never done that before.
Sat down just to read.
Yeah, because I didn't have anything bothering me, and it was like it's easy to read when you're traveling because there's no. That's you don't have anyone around you, and you're by yourself, and you have time. You're isolated. Well, I guess you're not isolated, but you have time to read. You know,
that thing. Taking the time to read, is exactly the same thing as meditating.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because when you read, like, I'm just forcing myself now to read, like a I'm treating myself like an oily kindergartner who just wants to sit in a puddle
and not bathe.
Yeah, because it's like there's a from going on the internet too much, some part of myself has weakened.
Oh, totally, because you want like you want immediate gratification. You want like the thing to be interesting right away.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It kills me. I find that now. It's like it's totally killed my ability to read is because if something doesn't happen, I'm not getting like, okay, where's the cool stuff? Where's the thing I want to remember? Where's the highlighting part? And it doesn't happen quick enough. I get like impatient. That's
you have
all.
To work with books.
Yeah, you do. You have to.
You don't get it right away. Books build, no. but when everything starts combining, oh,
it's a frothy spray.
God damn, man! That moment when a book when you feel yourself finally connecting with the story of the book and seeing where it's going, that's magic.
Yeah.
And it's reading is more important than your career.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Those are different things, but I guess you could say that, yeah.
Meditation is more important than your job.
But you could also say that those things will, they go back into it. So if your reading helps your career.
Oh, yeah, it'll help everything.
More than anything, really.
This is what people don't understand, is the flurry that everyone's gotten into at this point. I mean, people are in a flurry. They're running around. They're going around doing crazy shit everywhere that accomplishes nothing. It's gotten to the point now.
Doing. They're doing a lot of doing.
They're just
of,
doing.
Gotta be doing. You must be doing.
If you're not doing.
Who are you? What are you? You're not doing? Get out of my town.
What do you do?
What do you mean? What do I do?
That's just a question people
exactly.
ask
yeah,
each other.
That's the worst question. So what do you do? So what do you do?
What do you do?
What do you do? I don't know. I don't know what I do. I mean, what does a bird do?
It's yeah. This question that what do you do?
It's terrible. It's the worst thing ever. Doing is everything bad that's ever happened has been because of people doing things. Nothing like almost nothing bad happens from not doing, from inaction.
Good God Almighty, man. These people are cultists. Like, you know, everyone rails against the poor Scientologists.
They do, yeah.
But you want to talk about the real cult? It's the doers.
It's the doers. It's the, I guess you could say it's the capitalist machine. You could say it's the... I mean,
the machine is comprised of doers. And yeah. I want to talk about the particulates in the machine.
I've been a doer often.
Oh, God, Johnny. I've been
so have you. We all have been doers. You know you've been a doer.
I've been a doer.
Yeah.
But you know, thank God I had this amazing chance to have an excuse to not do anything.
Right, because you got struck down by the lightning finger.
2 fucking months.
Yeah.
I got a 2 month bench period. And during that time, I got to not do. And I like, don't get me wrong, I like doing. Doing is great. But I'm not talking about action because we all have to act.
Right.
I'm talking about the people who are clearly using their action as either some kind of revenge, some kind of like they're kind of like trying to get vengeance through their activity to prove to the world that they're okay.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? They're using their ambition is not because they're passionate about what they're doing. Their ambition is this desperate
to be better, to be like
in front.
What time did you get up this morning? No, I've been up for a while. I've been up doing it for a while now.
Yes.
No. Melanie? No, she got up. Melanie just got up. Everybody, Melanie just got up. Let's clap for her. No, I've been up doing. What I've been doing? Did a little of this, did a little of that, did some of this, did some of that. So we were doing. What were you doing? Oh, were you sleeping?
Oh, you're sleeping in.
Okay. You go ahead and do that, okay, Melanie? Okay, Melanie?
Okay, Melanie, you sleep in. Jack has not missed a day of work in the last 20
the
years.
Jack hasn't missed a day.
I remember it, and I for some reason, I still remember this. It was like junior high, the last like pep rally of junior high where they gathered us all in the gym to say goodbye to us. I went to Rugby Junior High, and from Rugby.
It's a great name.
And from Rugby Junior High, you moved to West Henderson, home of the Falcons. And that's up the hill. The high school was up the hill. And I remember the principal at Rugby coming out and giving this speech about how you're all going to move up the hill. and things are different up the hill. And they now, anyway, they gave an award. This is the thing. They gave an award. And the award was to this weird kid who hadn't missed one day of class.
It's always a weird kid.
In
Why is
three,
it always...
In 3 years, he didn't miss one day. Not one day. That's the ultimate, you know, that's a mini doer. Who's like, it's that, or like you'll hear it about comedians too. Oh, yeah. Oh, Jackie Flips. His appendix had exploded, but he still did his 15 minutes out of the Comedy Store that night.
Yeah. I played a gig on bass when I had an IV in my arm. That was doing. Maybe it wasn't doing. Maybe it was just, I don't know.
But in our society, the what's rewarded is not so much what is being done, it's the doing.
Yeah, the fact, you built the house, or you built the suburbs, you did it. You did the thing, I made the tea at least.
Action, 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 wake up, get going, wake up, get going. So you see this, and what ends up being lost is just really basic shit. And one of the first things that gets lost in this activity that you're always engaged in, here's what I can think of right offhand. There's three things that get obliterated by doing. But if you're in the cult, you know you're in the cult of doers. If right now you consider, when was the last time that you sat still and did nothing for 10 minutes straight?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not, no reading, no TV, no internet.
So difficult to do that.
When was the last time you did that? Just really think about that. When was the last time you did that? Think about that. Because for many, 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 many people.
It's almost never.
In their whole lives, they've never done that.
The best thing I think that the best thing to do in terms of like finding that kind of time is just to watch things. I find that like, I like more than anything, I would just like to like observe, you know, you just like, because if you're observing, you're not talking, you're not, all you're doing is watching. You're just watching what's happening. And if you go places, there's a lot of places that are very conducive to just looking and watching and observing. Like if you go to like the Huntington Gardens or something like that.
Sure.
If you go, or any place where you can watch things, watch nature and just sort of, you're just observing it. And it's weird when you don't say anything and you're quiet, how many things come forth because you're allowing them to present themselves.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
And also if you go and you decide to actually get out of your man-made cave and head out into nature and sit still in nature, you will find there is a really creepy amount of guilt that comes up. Like, you're supposed to be, it's such a weird thing to be just be out in nature, sitting still, not doing anything. There's this sense inside of you that's like, what are you doing?
Okay, what time is it?
What's next for the day? What are you doing? Why are you just sitting here? Man, it's a real fucking mess. I mean, we're talking like deep level brainwashing has been inflicted on this species.
Yeah, it's like it's getting worse too. I think it probably is getting worse because just how much noise is in the environment. We have a significant amount of noise, and noise makes it hard to be. It's very easy to be distracted because of all the noise.
Well, I mean, but the noise, you can absorb the noise. We're just talking about this like act, the act of you think you're free, but find a time that you normally would be doing and sit down and read for 2 hours and then tell me you're free. Because you're not. Because just finding those 2 hours to sit and read, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, God. Oh, to have that time.
To have the time to carve out. Yeah, because I was thinking of that part in American Splendor. Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
Remember when Harvey Pekar is in the bakery and he's buying like 2-day-old bread for cheap, and he sees some woman he used to go to college with, and she's like envious. You know, he's like hyper depressed and in like doldrums constantly. And this woman's like, she's like envious of his lifestyle because she has kids. And she's like, now I have, because they were in English class together. So they, and he was really good at that. And so she's like, oh, that's so amazing. You're reading that book. I haven't got to crack a book in so long because I have no time with the kids and everything like that. So it's like, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking about that.
No,
story, but
it's yeah, terrifying. It's the, but if you don't have kids, you still not. I just think of like, you know, being in LA, mm-hmm. we get to be around people who have the ambition of Napoleon.
They're crazy. Yeah, this town is like crazy driven. It's like there's never, you'd never see people who are so type A, just ready to cut down whatever jungle is in front of them.
But why do those people always seem so pissed?
I think it's because, I don't know, that's funny. I guess it's because maybe like the anger comes out of that action because they're so driven. It's like a part of the same thing, you know? It's like a part of the thing where they're, it's the aggression.
Yeah. They're steely and they like can actually get angry on the way to yoga. Like they'll get mad. Everything they do has this underlying current of anger beneath it. It's like they're actors usually, or they're producers, but in the midst of the process of acting like something or producing something, the fuel behind it is this bizarre competitive rage.
I think a lot of times there's a hummingbird right there, by the way.
They hang out in that window,
yeah,
and
it's
I love
very
them.
Pretty. It's a thing where it's a product of I don't know. I think maybe I feel this way sometimes too, is you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you really want or what you're trying to do, so you just do stuff with this sort of blind rage, and that sort of it's loud enough to quell the underlying question or whatever it is that you are unsure of. It busies the mind so you don't have to think about that thing that is really at the center of what you're driving for or moving toward.
What is that thing?
It's different for everyone, I suppose, you know? It's the thing. It's like, what is the big question, or what is the thing that you really want to be doing, or what is the thing that you really would make you happy? And I think if you're busy, if you keep yourself busy and always doing stuff, it's very easy to not have to deal with that thing that is maybe something that you should deal with.
I like, but you know, being busy is definitely a wonderful balm when you're feeling depressed. Like,
oh yeah, I think there's two different types though. I think there's one thing to be doing good. When if you feel bad, like to do good things, because nothing makes you feel better than helping other people when you feel bad. Because all of a sudden, it's just like it evaporates. But I guess I mean more like in terms of just like getting stuff on the calendar. Like, I always think about that kind of shit with my life. I'm like, this day's open. Oh no.
There's too much white
There's
on my
too
calendar.
Too much time, yeah.
Not enough ink on my calendar.
Exactly.
Yeah, I it all boils down to being outside the present moment, really.
Yeah, and that's the worst. That's the worst thing, is being not in the present moment.
What I like to do when I have these pangs of anxiety that have tormented me for my entire life is whenever I get a nice, like, sweet gong on the, like, when a nice big gong on the fucking anxiety bell, I like to, instead of just feeling the anxiety and reacting, I like to kind of trace back, like, who banged the gong. And it's inevitably, the being banging the gong is always a thought of the future.
Mm-hmm.
The anxiety comes from thinking about the future.
Yeah.
Like, if I think right now, I'm like, man, I'm going on the road Wednesday.
You got stuff to
do. I've got all this shit I've got to do. I've got 2 days to do it. How am I going to have the time to do it? I want to wash my clothes, and I need to clean, but I've got to.
Makes you crazy.
I got to get these podcasts done. I've got to make sure that I, like, have my material together and get the puppet polished.
Polish the puppet.
But if I don't let myself think about the future, and then I'm just here,
mm-hmm.
then everything slows down.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, when you just think right now about just being in the present moment, and you're just kind of sort of giving up the future.
Drinking the tea.
You're drinking tea.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, everything's like, I'm not going to say everything's great. You still have the residual hangover of a lifetime of thinking about the future that's always with you. But you
can deal with it.
Everything just shifts in such a substantial way the moment you pull the tendrils of your mind out of the phantasm of the past or the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels good to be in the moment, too. It feels very good. It's a thing where it's one of the best feelings, I suppose, is being in the moment. That and abject terror.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you think you like terror?
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day about how I don't know. I was, because I went running today and I had the terror, the quicksilver down the brain of terror. So not so much terror, but that fucking electricity, that lightning of endorphins that I get once in a while. And sometimes it makes me cry. Like, I'll think about something and I will be running and I will be crying because I'm like, not like weeping, not like, you know, weeping, but I'm like becoming very emotional because that chemical has been dropped into the think tank, and it's like all of a sudden I'm like blasting off into outer space kind of with but I feel like that's sort of like it's a sense of terror in a way. It's like, because it's so extreme, you know, it's a very extreme feeling of I guess it's in the moment. It's very much in the moment kind of thing. It's it's almost like, it's like an orgasm, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do know the feeling that you're talking about. It's the thing you're running to feel that feeling.
Yeah, I am.
Where many people are running away from that feeling at full speed at all costs. They don't want to feel that. That's a feeling you get not just from running. That's a feeling you get from falling in love.
Yeah.
That's a feeling you get from intimacy. That's a feeling you get from acknowledging how you actually are.
I guess anything really intense, any sort of intense version of something, like
getting fisted.
Getting fisted, definitely fisting. Falling, falling down a pit.
Falling into a pit of fists.
Mm-hmm. A fist pit. Fist pits are notorious around here. Yeah. I just missed one earlier today. Fist pit. Full on fist pit. A pissed fit.
When I get stoned sometimes, a pit of piss fists.
Oh, we got a pit of fist pissed here. We're gonna have to lock this down. What we discovered, sir, was when we were going to kill Osama, we discovered a fist pit. I don't know if you've been aware of this type of phenomenon. It's geological. We've encountered much in doing drills. Is a fist pit.
And over 50 of our Marines were fisted in that pit.
And I'll tell you what, they're not coming back. They're coming back physically, but they're not coming back.
There's nothing worse than when one of these fine soldiers comes back to our country to see their family and they've been fisted. Their soul's been fisted out of them.
I mean, to look at them, it's to look at a negative image. Like, as a photographer, if you took that negative image, that's what they look like physically.
It's like gazing into a blank cloud.
A cloud that knows what you're thinking. It's gazing into it. You ever look at a cloud and it looks back? Yeah. That's the best pit.
Their assholes have developed gravity similar to low-level star systems.
It is a black hole.
They can't shit without turds going back into their ass.
They shit it, it goes back in, then dicks will be flying from all corners of the world. Flying. I'm talking thousands of miles an hour. Dick just whipping through the air. Boom! Shooting up these assholes. And I tell you, this is what these terrorists are. This is what the power that they have unleashed. Because they've got this black hole, this gravitron, that is just sucking in dicks faster than anything I've ever seen in my life. It is a rain of dicks.
Not only do we have our soldiers' anuses sucking dicks in, but we are having to restrain the penises of non-affected soldiers so they get ripped right off their bodies and shoot.
It is very
at.
Difficult. Then this fellow, this Bosama Jim Laban feller, he is unable, he is immune to the effects of this. Very dangerous. Very dangerous.
He's got a nub. There's nothing down there.
He's a neutral creature, sir. We believe he may be the third sex.
The third sex.
Sir, we may have confirmation. Mr. Vice President, we believe we have confirmation of the third sex.
Destroy it.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? I'm not vice president anymore. Sir, you've been elected for life.
I don't know, man. I think that when I get stoned and go eat breakfast at this cafe, I felt for a moment like I was existing in the Neolithic period, like I was existing.
That's caveman, right?
Yes. Yeah. That I was existing in a primordial past. That kind of like weird moment where you're sort of suddenly wake up just for 1 second. You're like, oh God, we're so very primitive. we're so still exactly in the place we were at.
Oh yeah, nothing's changed. It's just sort of like the clothing. Or just the color of the whatever, just the overarching sheen has changed, but everything's the same.
And then you combine, so it's like you have this sheen, but it's the prohibition on being able to look at other people. You can't look at people.
What do you mean?
If you spend too long staring.
One
of the first things you teach kids.
Just don't stare.
Don't stare. You're not allowed to look. And this is the thing that got me really freaked out as I started. I actually looked it up. How many stars are there in the universe? Well, they don't know that. But right. In the Milky Way, they think there's right around 300 billion stars.
That's a lot.
On Earth, there's only 6 billion people. Mm-hmm. So that makes people more unique than stars.
Right.
So I was thinking if I was at a cafe and a bunch of stars were at the table eating, all I would do is stare at them.
Right.
Because they're so unique and incredible. But somehow in this dimension, we've incarnated as sentient star particulates and we're not allowed to look at each other in cafes.
I do it sometimes, though. I break it.
I do too, and then people think you're trying to fuck them.
Well, there's nothing greater than when you get the chance to watch someone who doesn't know you're watching them. That's one of the greatest feelings I've. I remember one time I was doing this show, this play, right?
Yes.
And there was a girl who was doing the play after us who was doing her makeup, and it took her like a good 20 minutes to do her makeup, and she was really engaged in doing the makeup. Right? She was not thinking about anything else because she was really looking in the mirror, engaged. And I sat there. The entire time I was like going over my lines, but I was watching her like the whole time. It was like the most relaxing thing I've ever, one of the most relaxing experiences I've had. Cause it was like, you're just watching someone do these very simple actions and that she was completely unaware. I was just staring right at her. And it wasn't like looking at her cause, oh, she's hot. It wasn't like that. It was just looking at her. Cause it's like something about the actions she was doing were pleasant.
It's comforting.
Yeah. It's comforting. It's like those chances are, that's why you got to ride the bus.
I had a friend who was a voyeur. I'm going to make a confession. And this friend of mine.
Wait, when you say a voyeur, does that mean he derives sexual pleasure from that?
No, not sex. I wouldn't call it sexual pleasure.
So what is it then? How am I not a voyeur then, I guess? That's what I mean.
That's voyeuristic, what you did. I don't know that voyeurism always has to be sexual pleasure being derived from the observation of the being. I mean, Jane Goodall is a chimp voyeur.
Absolutely.
Well,
science is nothing but observation.
That fucking Mars probe, man. Fucking voyeur. What a perv. It's up there fucking snapping shots of that poor planet.
Taking them to look at later.
Analyzing everything. But I had a friend who was a voyeur. And I remember once he was like, I want to show you something that I do. And he took me behind a building where he'd found a window that he could stare in.
Uh-huh.
And there was no way for the person in there who kept their window open to know they were being observed because of, I guess, the way, I don't know.
Just the light. The lighting is
the
such.
The lighting.
Yeah.
And so we stood out there. I'll never forget this. This is the one. Wow. This moment is firmly fused into my mind.
Yeah.
Because we sat there and watched this person at a desk writing. That's all, just writing.
Right.
The weird glow of the light. And, man, aside from, like, the creep factor of thinking like, whoa, shit, man, my friend is so freaky. But aside from that, it was like, there was this moment, it's relaxing. There was a moment of like,
it's truth.
Of yes, you're seeing truth. You're seeing,
truth.
You're seeing people who aren't lying. When people don't know they're being observed, they're not lying. They're just,
they're living in the actual moment. It's true.
They're in the moment.
That's why people can't stand bad acting. That's why it makes them uncomfortable. Because bad acting is like, because it's not true.
That's awesome.
I mean, good acting isn't really even acting. It's just, it's finding a way to be something for real And you're not tricking anybody. I mean, there are a lot of people who do trick, but it's that same thing. That's why people like watching movies and plays so much. They'll always like watching them because they love watching, being able, because what you did was basically a way to watch someone as though you would watch them in a movie. Because if you watch a movie or a play, no one's ever going to tell you to stop looking at them because it's a spectacle. It's there to be watched.
Right.
And if they're doing it right, it's displaying truth, and you get to watch that truth, and it's really, really, really pleasant. So it's some. I think it's the. It's that same thing where you get to. There's so little truth in media and media products that we watch. Most of them are untrue and false and shitty. So if you get to see that truth in real life, it's like a play that's a really well-done play.
A perfect play.
Yeah, perfect play.
Perfectly acted.
Because mm-hmm.
when a person's being themselves, they're being the greatest actor of all time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're being, right now, you're the Daniel Day-Lewis of Johnny Pemberton.
I am. I'm doing it the best.
You're doing Johnny Pemberton better than anyone could do a Johnny Pemberton. But see, right. But this leads to, I was just talking to my friend about Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
And Kurt Cobain's suicide note.
Oh, I haven't read it in forever. I don't remember what it says.
Please read that drippy little thing. But his suicide note is one of his main problems is that he feels like he's faking it on stage.
That's a big problem with a lot of artists. I read some article about Helena Bonham Carter, and I don't know what you feel about her, but I like her as an actor.
Yes.
And she says that she was saying that how she feels like a fraud a lot of times.
Yes.
I think that's how fucking everybody feels.
Well, that's the thing.
You
because
have to.
Kurt Cobain, mm-hmm. ostensibly the great bard of annihilation.
A punk
deeply embedded in the truth, singing the siren song of rebellion against the falseness of the world,
getting paid to do it
but still, let's just say that get the money. I don't think getting paid is it's okay to throw money at talent. That's okay.
I think so.
But to me, where his entire message really becomes convoluted is that he killed himself because he began to experience real truth. When he says, I don't feel real anymore. I feel like I'm a fraud on stage.
Yeah.
What he's actually experiencing is the true state of being human. The true state of being human is to feel fraudulent. And the reason that you feel fraudulent is because your beingness is nothingness, is the combination of nothing being met with the awareness of the nothingness. That's at the root of all human beings. You've got the great white
self-awareness
board of consciousness, the whiteboard of consciousness, and it's being met simultaneously with this sense of an awareness of the self. And those two things, the awareness of the self mixed in with the self, create an innately fraudulent thing, because everything that you do that isn't nothingness is essentially acting.
Mm-hmm.
You're acting like something all the time. So anyway, Kurt Cobain, when he finally came to the realization of what he really was, you're a goddamn fraud. We're all frauds. We're out here trying. You're acting like your name's Johnny Pemberton. I'm acting like my name's Duncan Trussell. You act like those are the clothes you wear.
Yeah, I
act
these
like
out.
You pick those out mm-hmm. and you put on your costume. I put on my fucking costume. But at the base of the fucking thing is just this whiteboard of nothingness, this great field of oblivion.
Ooh, yeah. It's A440.
An A440. I don't know what that is.
It's the frequency of this.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
you're just the ohm. You're just this tone. You're this non-differentiated self that has, unfortunately, and a lot of people say this is a bad fucking, this is a catastrophe.
This to be that self-aware?
We're the death of the tone. We're the death of the nothingness. We're nothingness dying. And the experience of nothingness dying is this terrible predicament where mm-hmm. we've got to march around this stupid planet for 60 years acting like we're something.
Yeah, it's that's definitely a predicament. It's a thing where, so yeah, self-awareness is kind of horrible. It's because it takes you out of the moment. That's what takes you away from being alive, is being cognizant and so aware of what of who you are, as opposed to just being here now.
Well, this is why some people will say, dude, please just don't get into spirituality. Why? Don't get into meditation. Don't get into this stuff because it's going to wake you up.
Oh, yeah. And it'll stop you from making lunch plans.
You're already doing it. If you've managed to smack some fucking gold chains on, or if you've managed to really fucking adopt the identity that you're living, like you're just sure that's who you are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, babe, stay there.
Yeah. Holy stay in the zone.
How fun. You're just you. You're just this. You believe that, for example, like a lot of people believe.
Status quo.
You believe that you are important.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, uh-huh. How fun.
Why am I not being recognized? What? No, I should be on that list. Excuse me.
So fun.
Hey, will you ask me to be there?
Pardon
me. I don't believe I was asked to be this thing. Surely you meant to invite me and to put me on that list of select people.
But quite often it's the opposite. It's the opposite where you're like, I just don't think they like me. I think everyone hates me. I don't think anyone likes.
So
like,
bad.
No, it's not even that. No one's noticing you.
Yeah, that's. Yep. Yeah.
It's
such a trap.
Oh, it's a hoot.
Especially with comedy too. With comedy stuff, it's so easy to think about all that horrible shit.
Well, I mean,
there's so many evaluative scenarios and it's just really gross.
Well, it's gross because for some reason my mind always goes to goths. Like, right. I think about how funny goths are because they're kind of like dour and they wear black clothes and they wear these funny costumes and they just really stick out.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if there's even goths anymore, but
there are.
But
it's coming back.
But in the same way, when you run into like career comics, you know what I mean? Like people doing the career comedy thing.
Yeah.
And they all hang out with each other and you know what I mean? They all like. They all act in a particularly similar way.
There's a style.
There's a style to it. And it's like in the same way, oh, you guys are goths. Like you're goths. Only the way that you're dressing and acting is a different thing, but it still is a very similar thing.
Yeah.
And when you see rich people and you'll notice that, Jesus Christ, these are fucking goths. They're all acting weird. They're all acting in the same goddamn way. And at the core root of all these things, it's just people who are putting on or who are acting like
they're
something.
In drag. They're in drag for that particular show. Like that rich person thing, especially, that's a thing where it's never changed really. It's just the styles have changed, but basically it's always been this thing where you have to be a certain way if you're wealthy, to where it's not even doesn't matter how much money you have. It matters how much if you act like the people who have money.
Button it down. You button it down. Here's what you do. You button it down. You go to Pilates. You get your trainer. You get ready for pilot season.
Your car's gotta
be clean. You fire your agent. You rehire an agent. And you're out there and you're doing the thing.
And
that's what
it is. Clean. You have to have a nice car. It has to be clean. Must be clean and it can't be old. It has to be new. That's something that I remember seeing some documentary a while ago about class and how people often, and still today and probably always will, mistake racism for classism. Because classism is the true discriminatory evaluative system. It's not, people don't care. Like if you're black and you're rich, racist white people will love you. Because like, oh, you're black, but you're not black.
Yeah.
You're rich. Yeah. You're one of us. You understand the same things. But the only thing, nothing scares a rich person more than a poor person, especially a poor white person.
Especially a happy poor person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Nothing's going to put a fucking stick right in the eye of a rich person than getting around a real, authentic Christian who's generally like somebody who's like figured out how to be completely happy, has abandoned. And I mean, I'm not talking about the kind that like fuck kids or the kind that like hate gay people. I'm talking about when you come to like that humble person who's just like, they're just happy. They're happy no matter what, man. They're not running around. They're not like getting their goddamn teeth tips whitened.
They're volunteering. Yeah, volunteering. Probably.
They're not even thinking about it. They're not even.
They're just fun.
They're not even thinking about it. They just did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a spook show, man. And so the the fraud. This goddamn state of feeling like a fraud, feeling that emptiness. You should just be. You got to even get past that and just become the emptiness.
Yeah, be the worst. Sometimes I think about that. I'm like, oh, I'm going to try to do the worst job I can with something.
Not be the worst.
It's a freeing thing. If you do that, sometimes it's a thing where...
it's not the worst. The emptiness, I don't think it's the worst.
I guess I mean more in the sense of if you don't strive for something, then that's... then you're in like a Zen state because you're not trying to make it good, not trying to do a good job, you know?
I think what it is you strive in the Zen state. So what I mean is instead of being like completely ego-based,
right.
Instead of being the costume, you know, it's like, okay, look, we didn't get invited to this fucking kid's party.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened where a vagina shot us into a wardrobe area called our family.
Mm-hmm.
The
wardrobe area.
Yeah. So yeah. We got wardrobe by our family, and the wardrobe didn't just consist of the clothes that they put on us. The wardrobe consists of the internal costume that they injected into us. And then now we're at this kid's party where everyone's supposed to dress up like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're all wearing these stupid fucking clothes dressed up like ourselves. And it's like, it's when people start arguing over their costumes and judging other people's costumes based on the costume they're wearing. That's where things get weird. I guess I'm doing the same thing. I'm being judgmental.
But it's,
I wear a fucking costume. I got a fucking personality. I put on a show.
Yeah,
I spray up fucking tail feathers. I do a little dance around this goddamn dimension acting like something.
But
shit, we're all stuck in it.
It's different though. If you're not aware of it and you're not like realizing like what you're doing, I think it's different.
And both are fine. In fact, it's better. God damn it. If you're out there selling cars and dressed in an awesome outfit and happy with your life and you fight over your sports teams, fucking do
it's great.
Not in a condescending way either.
Yeah,
it's you're healthier than people who are like a tooth half hanging out of the mouth of God just with a little nerve ending that's kind of getting blistered by everything, can't go in, can't fall out,
right? That's why I always get jealous of hillbillies. I always wanted to be a hillbilly. Wouldn't that be great to be like just a like the semi-ignorant hick and just really something about that? I just really think that'd be that would be fun, because I always think of whenever I do this character once in a while. It's like a redneck guy, and it's like a thing where it feels so good to do that character because I feel like there's nothing I don't know how to answer, because I know the truth of everything in that character's life, and so everything's easy. It's like so simple because you just know. Well, this goes back to honesty, I suppose, because it's about because if you're playing a character. That character has no repercussions for being honest because it's a character. You're obviously doing a character. It's a joke.
Yeah.
So you can be as honest as you want because it's not you. And that's why I think, yeah, like, really happy people are people who are the same as some character because there is no answer that they can't. There's no wrong answer to anything because they're always speaking from a place of truth.
Yeah,
It's hard to be truthful with yourself.
You know what it is, man. Both sides are just oblivion. It's like either you're like acting like a thing,
yeah.
Your nothingness acting like a somethingness to the point where you're completely unaware of the nothingness that's acting like a somethingness, or your somethingness that's become aware of the fact that your nothingness sort of merging back down into the nothingness. But either way, it's oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're nothing.
It's all shit.
It's not shit. It's not shit.
I just wanted to say that.
That does sound depressing. When you hear oblivion, it sounds awful. When you hear annihilation, it sounds awful. But really, it's just thinking of something so grand that it's you can't conceptualize it.
Right. It's everything. Everything at this, it's all the same.
It's the place where everything becomes so profoundly incredible that it becomes incomprehensible. Yeah. That's all. And it's like that incomprehensible place is what we really are.
Right, because when you sense that, sometimes I feel like it's like a fleeting thing, but when you do sense it, it's a thing where
I don't know. I think it's, I say the word hopeless, but I think hopeless in like a good sense, a sense where it's like you are so hopeless and so powerless to the to everything that you are. It's like the best and the worst at the same time. It's everything because you realize for a second, or somehow you have come to understand that the nothingness and the complete complete hopelessness of whatever it is that you think you are, and that's so freeing and so amazing because you're like, oh, this is thing, this massive beyond all measure, and you're just some little blip.
Gone beyond, gone beyond, gone beyond the going.
What is that?
It's some kind of Buddhist thing.
Really? Yeah, some kind of Buddhist shit. Some kind of Buddha butter.
Well, that's the that I was just listening to this awesome. Thich Nhat Hanh YouTube video.
Is he a yogi?
He's a Buddhist monk.
Okay.
And he was saying, like, you know, Buddha, you see Buddha in the present moment. Like, you can still experience Buddha. Buddha exists in the moment. Buddha never left. Buddha's enlightenment was this thing where it blasted out a repetitive, it sort of like injected the essence of that being into the present moment perpetually and eternally, because really that's all you are anyway. It's like what happened with Buddhism was when a human being, their ego like actually did crack off.
It disappeared. It vaporized.
But they were still alive.
Yeah.
It was like Buddha was probably like the first contact with one of the first contacts with an alien. Think or so?
Because how that was Siddhartha. How long ago was that? It's 2000 BC or something. I don't really know the dates very well. But
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they say he incarnated a bunch of different times.
Right.
Like sometimes he was a cricket that did something really sweet. All this weird shit. Sometimes he's a bird. But it was like all these different incarnations, and in every incarnation, it was like getting closer and closer to this final like blast where the whole thing gets cracked open. Mm-hmm. This way is shown the pathway forward for humanity to like get out of this goddamn silly phase that we're in right now was revealed. And it took a lot of different incarnations to get to that place.
So he's there now. He made it.
He did it. Well, I mean, I don't know, man.
He made it, bro.
He made it.
Bro, he made it. Buddha?
He did it.
That dude fucking made it.
He booked a half hour.
There's some way to think about that in context of, that's such a funny thing, too. God, sorry. What was that?
A horn.
It was a horn. Oh, it was a horn. A good old horn. Yeah, he made it, dude. He made it. He fucking struck the bell.
He struck the bell. That's the yeah, I don't know, man. I don't really understand any of that stuff, but the older that I get, the more it seems like all that stuff that they say is completely right on.
What stuff? The who says?
Well, the whole idea of like going into a state of
blissful non-desire,
abandoning everything. Mm-hmm. That's it. Sacrificing your future permanently, obliterating your future with no regard for result, annihilating your future, evaporating your past.
Yeah.
And that, when you think about evaporating your past, like really sacrificing your past, oh shit.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Give up your mom. Give up your dad. Mm-hmm. Give up your friends. Give up everything from
the record collection.
Everything's gone. Everything's gone. And in the future, give up your hopes. Give up your dreams.
Expect nothing.
Give up your expectations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give up what you think is going to be a result of this thing.
Yeah.
And then what do you got?
You have freedom.
Then you become something else, but you're not you anymore. I'm just asking you to take off your fucking kid's party costume and show me your dick.
Let's close maybe the door.
Maybe the Buddha was just molesting humanity. Take your clothes off.
Hey, it doesn't matter if you're naked here. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
No, seriously. You can keep your clothes on.
Take it off.
You can also take them off.
Take it off.
It is warm in here, isn't it? It's warm.
It's warm. It's a little too hot in this dimension. Let's take our egos off and show each other our cosmic
what
dicks.
What's that you have there? Looks like a star.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. Where did this podcast go?
Take a break?
Fuck, yeah. Did any of this make sense, what we just said?
Doesn't matter.
All right. Yeah, it doesn't. Do you think it'd be weird to be the first person to have an orgasm on a podcast?
I think that's it has to have been done, right? So many porn stars who've...
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, podcasting. Yeah, I'm a porn star. Guess what? I'm going to shock you. Hey, look out, world. I'm a porn star. Yeah, I said it, Mom. Yeah, guess what? I'm not a stupid bee. I'm a porn star, and I like to go to book. Guess what? I'm going to shock you. I like to go to bookstores more than I like to go to porn stars.
What?
But I'm a porn star.
What?
I'll suck your dick right now, but guess what? I won't suck it. I'm a porn star.
I thought you would.
I love that shit, the porn, like the let me shock you with how non-shocking I am, but still being a porn star.
I just, you know, I'm just like anybody else. I like to eat soup.
I love soup. I also love sucking a big double. Oh, give me a juicy double, Mac Christ.
Hey, you know what's interesting, man? There's also sometimes behind porn stars the same kind of anger that's behind, like, super ambitious people.
I'm sure.
In that shock thing, like, I just love to suck cocks.
Ah, guess what?
Not all porn stars, by the way.
No, but just
I know. Cool. I know actually a super cool.
I'm sure
gay
you do.
Porn star.
There have to be out there, but I guess I'm just sort of sick of the new thing now, where it's like, hey, porn is cool, man. It's like it's totally it's like hip to be.
This is so funny you're saying this.
Flaunting it.
Because the next guest that I have on the podcast is Sam Tripoli,
right,
who has a podcast dedicated to porn, or mostly porn.
There you go.
So we're going to get into porn. We're going to talk a lot about porn. Wow. Porn stars. My opinion on porn is that it's so overpowering. I'm not.
It is. It's pretty fucking amazing that we have that. Like, it's such a new thing, really, if you think about it.
It makes me feel like I'm a cow and a farmer, and I'm just milking myself.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? It makes you feel kind of trapped.
What do you mean? Because it's just so available?
Yeah, it's just available. Whenever you find yourself jerking off to porn,
mm-hmm,
it's just always this, like, there's never, ever that I can think of a time when I'm jerking off to porn where I'm like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to be doing.
Yeah, it's always like a means to an end or something.
It just is this numb blankness. It's just like, oh, here we go, fucking jerking off to porn.
Some people have successfully not looked at porn anymore. At least they claim to, which I think is interesting. That would be so hard to do. I wonder if I could do that. I guess I could do that. Maybe I'll try. 30 days. Morgan Spurlock.
30 days, no porn.
30 days, no porn, and just McDonald's.
Ugh, God damn it. See where we're at, man. That's what I'm saying. This is the Neolithic period. We're still in some dumbass part of human existence where that's what we're obsessed with.
But we're so young. We are very, very
young.
As
a species?
Yeah, think about sharks. Think about fucking sharks, man.
Yeah.
Sharks, they're really old. They haven't changed at
all. Yeah, sharks probably used to, all they used to do is look at porn.
Yeah. There was the porn period of sharks, which was, there's some fossilized evidence of sharks masturbating to trilobites, doing sea sprays.
That's all they do is jerk off the starfish.
And then once they got their rows of teeth, they moved beyond.
To eating them.
Just to going down and just consuming all things. Just these... God, there's this great.
How did sharks get so fucking lucky?
I don't know, man. I think it's just one of those things where it's a good design and it just stuck. It's like how
tube with teeth.
They're like Helvetica. They're Helvetica, the animal.
Aren't they? Isn't the idea with sharks is that they've barely evolved from?
They haven't changed at all.
That's just it.
Yep, they haven't changed. They're fucking crazy.
No, I'm fine. I'll just be an underwater teeth tube.
I'll just eat everything all the time and not sleep.
Why do I? I don't need a car. Thank you.
Nope, I'm fine. I have this rocket kill tube. That is me.
I don't need. Yeah, I don't need an elevator.
No.
Don't need a watch.
Don't need no elevator to change this.
Just need the front of me to have a shitload of razor-sharp knives in the front that I keep open as I swim through the sea, eating everything.
Eating everything without regard to what it is. There's something, oh God, there's this really great zine that
Nick Johnson, the guy who wrote Big Dead Place, put out called Shark Fear and Awareness. You can get it on Amazon. It's so funny. It's the funniest thing you've ever read because he's basically just talking about a whole thing is about how sharks are the worst, how they're horrible and they should be feared. I mean, it's all a big joke, but it's just, it's so fucking funny the way he talks about sharks in the same way we're talking about it.
You know Hemingway, when he went fishing, he used to have a machine gun.
He did?
On his boat that he would shoot sharks with as he was fishing.
God, what an asshole.
Well, no, because they were going for his food. When he was reeling, he would reel fish in. That was a problem. Like, when you would reel fish in, the sharks would, like, bite the fish. He caught one of the biggest fish in, like, a world record size fish that got half eaten up by sharks that he tried to shoot with machine guns.
Machine guns. People hate sharks, man. They really hate them. It's so
why would you look? I mean, there are – it's very hard for me to like a shark.
I don't know. I feel like they
I wouldn't want to go to coffee with one.
They have a very distinctive it doesn't want to go to coffee with you, that's for sure.
No shit.
It has no desire for coffee. Maybe like a coffee of blood.
It's just that.
Oh, would you care for a blood coffee? Sure.
It's just that look in a shark's eyes.
Yeah, it's that glazed over the terror look. The terror of just death.
It's the same look Ron Jeremy has.
What they are gods. They're like God's black angels, the sharks. They're there to do what was that? It's the only good quote from
God's black angels.
That's the only good quote from that newborn movie where what's his name? What's the guy's? I can't think of actors' names anymore. I do this. He's the guy. He's the skinny guy. He was in that movie, the racist one. He's gained a lot of weight. He was in that other Spike Lee movie. He's a white guy. He plays like serial killers. He was in.
I don't know.
Oh, come on. You know his name.
Brother, I can barely remember my aunt's
fucking
name.
Fucking A. Fight Club. What's it? Brad Pitt and Edward Norton.
Yes.
Edward Norton says to. He says, we are the sin eaters. Oh. I was like, oh, that makes sense. It kind of makes sense. You do the bad things and you eat the sin. You consume it so it doesn't have to poison other people's perfect realities.
Wow.
I think sharks are the sin eaters of the world.
Sharks are the black holes of the sea.
Yeah. They eat the sin. They do the bad. They do all the bad.
Yeah, eating fish isn't really sin.
Maybe it's not. Maybe spiders are the sin eaters.
I mean, eating spiders is more evil than spiders eating bugs.
Yeah. I think killing spiders rampantly is pretty evil.
I do, too. I try never to kill a spider. What do you got here?
Okay, this is the thing. Okay, so I picked up this... This is a little thing called Radical Mycology. I just read this last night. It's an SLF primer. It's from the Spore Liberation Front, which is a group of people dedicated to the proliferation of mushrooms.
What's their website?
Let's see here. It's SLF. I think it's something. Oh, fucking.
It's not in there. They didn't.
You can find it.
These goddamn anarchists. Print your fucking website on your goddamn zine.
Just use the internet. Spore Liberation Front. It's there. So I read this last night. This totally blew my mind. So, fucking, I just lost the page. Jesus Christ.
This is from a zine convention that Johnny went to.
Yeah.
Johnny's girlfriend is a very talented visual artist, and she puts out really cool zines. And so Johnny went to a zine.
Check out supersecretpowwow.com. Okay, so here I'll just read it here. The oldest known mushroom found in amber has been dated over 90 million years old. Mycologist Tom Volk theorizes that millions of years ago, trees developed cellulose and lignin to protect themselves against fungi that were consuming them. As time progressed, mushrooms evolved so that they can now decompose these components. But all the vegetation that died in the interim just piled up, got compressed, and after millions of years became fossil fuels. This is why the earth will never produce oil or fossil fuels again, because mushrooms will forever on decompose living matter.
Wow.
Fucking blew my mind off.
Wow.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Mushrooms can do they can do everything. They can eat. We talked about this before, but how that guy Paul Stamets talks about how they're just a matter of time before mushrooms can evolve to they can decompose any substance, any toxic substance. It's just a matter of time before mushrooms learn to eat that and spit out nutrients that they can eat themselves. That's fucking crazy.
They're more advanced than us.
Well, they I was also reading about this, and they talk about this in the same thing about how mushrooms
are closer to animals than they are to plants, because they don't. Plants produce their own food through photosynthesis. Mushrooms don't. They eat.
They're
they
hunters.
They consume. Yeah. They spread out and they consume their fuel. They consume it like we do.
This is the thing that was on Reddit about slime molds.
Okay. Yeah. Same sort of
thing.
They
don't have a brain, but if you put a slime mold, if you put a slime mold into a maze where at the end of the maze is food, the slime mold will send throughout every possible pathway in the maze tendrils, and it will take the fastest, finally it will find the fastest way from point A to point B being the food, and it will withdraw all the tendrils that aren't the fastest way and just go the fastest way down into the food.
You know what that reminds me of? Creep.
Oh, you mean, are you talking about StarCraft?
I am. It reminds me of Creep.
It is like Creep.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is supposed to be fungus.
It is, because those are neural networks. They're exactly the same as any network.
Neural networks. Yeah. And that's the other thing is that, so the they took maps of London and of Tokyo, and they put food where all the subway stops are. And the slime molds, the pathways based on the geography that they took, were almost identical to the subway paths, to the road maps. And so the point of the article is these things don't have a brain, but they're still doing
things
what
that
humans are doing with brains.
Because humans are so smart.
Wow.
We're so smart. We're so great. Humans have created such great, incredible things that would never get created otherwise. We're so good. We should pat ourselves on the back constantly.
Good job, humans.
Oh, we're so good. Oh, we do such a good job at everything.
We're
oh.
so good. As a species, we are so fucking hung up on ourselves.
Oh, God, man. We are so deeply, deeply hung up on how great humans are. We're just the fucking best.
Oh,
how many? A human died? Kill them all.
Let me ask you this. Can you do this as an acting exercise? This isn't fair asking you last second.
Okay.
But I want to interview you as though you are every human on Earth combined into one being, is the ego of the planet.
Okay, that's a pretty interesting task. So I'm the ego of the planet, huh?
You represent our species.
Well, who are you?
Hi, everybody. This is Duncan Trussell. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. Today, I'm going to be interviewing the entire human species.
Hello.
Embodied in one being. Hey, how's it? What's up?
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for coming on the show. So what's it like?
What do you have for me?
I know, I want tea.
Oh, is there more? Can I have more, please?
Yeah, I'll get some more.
Oh, great. How much do you have?
I have, I don't know, like 5 bags.
Okay, I'll have all of it. Thank you. Can you make it, please? Thank you. I'll have all of it. Then we can begin.
You're a shark.
I'll have all of it, please.
You just are a consuming thing, aren't
you? I'll have all of it.
That's it, huh?
Yeah,
that's your idea of the species?
I think so.
I think it's like a combination of I'll have all of it, but acting also, like, I mean, you have to, what you just created was kind of like a black-eyed alien being that's just like, I only devour. I think there's another side to it, which is like manipulative or something.
Right. Okay. Sort of conniving, like a trickster.
Yeah.
Like Loki.
Yeah.
Like Loki the trickster.
Yeah. I think the species is just very puffed up right now.
Oh, yeah, we're pretty high on ourselves.
That's why that meteor was such a great happening.
Yeah, like, oh, oops. I watched something on Fox News. There was a clip, and the woman, after she closed it off, she's like, oh, well, hope no one got hurt. That's the last thing she said. I was like, idiot. You just finished house saying thousands of people were injured, and, well, hope no one got hurt.
I love, man, there is just something about that that's so nice. It's like, you know, it's like when the
it's the best. It's like when there's like a terrible rainstorm or anything like that, any force of nature.
Or it's like when you're watching the People's Court and you've got some really puffed up teen who obviously did some stupid thing to someone else's property and they get smacked down by Wapner. It was like, that's what happened to the entire species.
Yeah.
You get this puffed up teenage species. It's like, we're so fucking great. We're going to kill each each other. Instead of focusing on interstellar travel, we're going to spend all our money on weapons and fighting over imaginary religions, because that's how fucking... There's just plenty of us to go around.
Could have been to Mars 50 years ago. Nah.
Nah, let's fight each other. Let's blow each other up. Then all of a sudden, one very... very
tiny,
tiny little rock from space comes plunging down, shatters glass, a nuclear explosion. There's that one moment where it's like, oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing again? Wait, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Grammys?
The Grammys, yeah.
What are we?
Wait, she got the Grammy? She got robbed. She got robbed. I can't believe that.
Bang! That's explosion of the fucking thing. Boom! It's the window shattering. Mm-hmm. That stunned jump as everyone, like, its body is jolted by the impact wave of a thing that's probably traveled billions of miles. Who the fuck knows where that fucking...
Oh, it's been traveling for all of time.
All of time.
All of time that some piece of that has been moving. Yeah, it's ancient.
It's like aliens... If aliens really wanted to send humanity a message... That's the message.
Yep.
It's not like, be kind to each other. It's not love each other. It's a mid-sized meteor that causes thousands of people to get injured by the glass shattering in their face.
Right.
And the real, and the, that's the, that's the, what we got was a fucking.
We just got like a fingernail.
We got a letter from the Intergalactic Council inviting us to join the rest of space. And the letter is like, check it out, motherfuckers. You guys are so exposed.
Mm-hmm. Exposed and with like your heads down looking at like something right in front of you.
Looking at each other.
Yeah.
You're just looking at each other, sculpting each other, drawing each other, acting like each other, fucking each other, obsessed with each other. Yeah. Do that after you build the meteor shields, you dopes.
Yeah.
It's like watching someone... we're seeing somebody do this really like puffed up, silly, self-absorbed dance in front of a firing squad.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a matter of time. It is just a matter of time.
Just a matter of time doing pirouettes, mm-hmm. soliloquies. There's something sweet about that.
Mm-hmm. That's going to just get little... It's a candle that's burning. It's a lot of metaphors.
We got to go back. Look, if you want to kill each other, fine. But first, build the meteor shields.
I think that would be possible.
I think we're starting to work on
the Iron Curtain. Well, we should build it over Israel because they already have the Iron Dome, right? They have the Iron Dome.
Yeah.
So we just expand the Iron Dome. I love that name, the Iron Dome.
There's just nowhere to stop it.
I just want some more iron. I think maybe we can have like an iron cage around the earth. A giant, like literal iron cage around the earth.
Just a, like, yeah, yeah. like a black,
yeah,
kind of intricate cage.
With like a Halliburton logo on it, yeah. each pole.
No way out.
No way out. No way in. Don't worry about it. We're good.
We're fine.
Get
back to killing each other.
Yep. That's what it sounds like.
All right, Pemby, got to wrap it up.
Trussy.
That's
great.
You have an amazing fucking podcast.
Yeah, it's getting really good. This last episode is, I'm very proud of it.
Where can people find your podcast?
You find it on the Feral Audio Network, of which you are a part of.
I am a part of Feral Audio.
It's called Twisting the Wind, and you can listen to it.
FeralAudio.com.
Mm-hmm. You can go to iTunes.
You can go to iTunes and download it. You can follow Johnny Pemberton on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just my name. You can check out a really good phone call with this Nigerian scammer a few episodes ago. It's a muscle. Did you hear that yet?
No,
you got to hear it. It's great. It's great. This guy, he did not like me.
They get mad.
They get mad because I was saying something that sort of contradicted his worldview.
What was that?
That I was going to use the money that I was not going to get from him to buy a helicopter gunship to take over another country.
What'd he say?
He just got mad. He also got mad when I said I don't believe in God.
Where is this? I've got to hear this.
It's on the episode with J.K. Simmons.
So wait, this is an Ethiopian scammer.
No, it's a Nigerian scammer.
A Nigerian scammer, yeah. Mad at you because you're an atheist.
Well, yeah, mad. And I also asked if I could sleep with him too. Because I wanted to know if I could share the secret of the money with
him. Send me a clip and I'll play it right now.
Okay, I'll send you a clip.
Send me the clip. I'll play just the clip and then people can go listen to the rest.
Sounds good.
All right, we're out of here, guys. Listen to Johnny Pemberton's podcast. Hare Krishna. God bless you.
Bye, Duncan.
Say bye, Johnny.
Thanks
bye.
For having me.
Okay, guys, that was Johnny Pemberton. If you enjoy this podcast, why not go leave a comment or a star, 4-star review for us at iTunes? All right, here I just discovered this song, and I really love it. This song is called "On the Ropes," and it's by the Eels, and it's from their album "Wonderful Glorious." I think it's a great song. I think they're awesome. Bye.
Every time I find myself in this old bind, watching the death of my hopes, in the ring so long, gonna prove them wrong. I'm not knocked out, but I'm on the ropes. I've got enough fight left inside this tired heart to win this one and walk out on my feet. No retreat. I may never get everything I bet, but I'm a man who always copes. I'm hurting bad and fighting mad. I'm not knocked out, but I'm on the ropes. Everything that I hold near and dear to me, riding on this moment here and now, I know how. Left inside this tired heart to win this one and walk out on my feet. No defeat. Gonna feel so good when it's understood. Behold the rebirth of my hopes. In the ring so long, gotta prove I'm wrong. I'm not knocked out, but I'm on the ropes.